Hi, I'm Mike Holland. I'm the Managing Editor of Pharmaceutical Executive, and welcome to the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm joined today with Alice Valder Corinne. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks, Mike. How are you?
Good. If you just want to start off, just give our listeners a brief background, your work history, and your expertise.
Sure. So I'm a partner at Hogan Lovells, and my practice focuses on market access and commercialization from a regulatory standpoint with a real focus on drug pricing.
And with drug pricing, our topic today is the current state of the most favored nation pricing, which has been a topic the industry's been focused on since last June or July when it first came up, and is still evolving, I would say. Would you agree with that?
Still top of mind, and yes, still evolving. Today, we're recording it on the day that comments are due to the proposed rules on the GLOBE and GARD model. That's the administration's proposed demonstration projects for implementing MFN pricing in the Medicare Part B and Part D programs, respectively. So that's something that people are busily making sure that they get done. And then also, we have a voluntary MFN program on the Medicaid side, with its acronym being GENERIS. And that deadline that's looming is manufacturers who are interested in participating in that program have to submit their responses to the administration's RFI by the end of March.
And we've seen a little bit of the MFN initiative kind of launch this year with the launch of Trump RX, which is supposed to be the first, if we understand it correctly, the first kind of most favored nation pricing available to US citizens. What were your reactions to the site when it first launched?
Well, we were waiting for it to launch and sort of just didn't know what the format was going to be because manufacturers in general have their own process for getting price reductions to patients at the point of dispensing. Manufacturers have been doing that for a long time, starting with literal paper coupons probably a couple decades ago, now to having copay assistance cards that are physical or virtual. So manufacturers know how to do that. They know the vendors that they like to use, who the dispensing pharmacies they are that they like to use. They have, partners that they've worked with and that know their products. And so I wasn't quite sure how Trump RX would work. It's still not entirely clear to me how it works. If you look at the website, it lists the drugs. Last time I looked last week, it was 43, I think. And when you click on each product, it gives you what looks like a paper coupon with a BIN PCN number to use. And you're supposed to present that to the pharmacy, which is a little different from how I thought it was going to work. I thought it was going to leverage manufacturers' existing programs. So it's still not entirely clear mechanically how it works. And I don't want to move too quickly past the price reduction. That itself is truly new. I think a lot of manufacturers have done a little bit of that, and now they're doing more of it. And it's great for access. But I, wearing my advisory hat, just worry about the mechanics of how you get all that set up and actually get it to the patients in a timely way while they can access it. And then the other issue I'm also thinking about is what does this mean for patients who don't really have the discretionary income to pay for these products? I mean, normally when we saw these direct-to-patient cash prices come out, they were on products that were, the GLP-1s. They were products that were sort of discretionary spending, so to speak, for patients. And so it came out of that discretionary income they had. The products that we now see on the Trump RX website definitely move beyond just discretionary lifestyle, so to speak, products to core primary care products. And it's great that patients can access those if they don't otherwise have access to them. But if their health plans will otherwise pay for them, the question is there going to be some incentive for health plans not to pay for them and instead tell patients to just go get the direct to patient price? What happens with those expenditures? Do they count towards the patient's out-of-pocket or deductible? So there are some real operational concerns and patient access concerns still that are out there that we have to work through. But certainly, it's great to see that website up and running so that we can actually start working through those details.
Well, as someone that had to click through every drug on the website, I can tell you, yeah, 40, it was about 43 when I checked. And there were drugs on there like insulin, which that is not a discretionary. That's something if you need, you need. But also, I will say many of the drugs, like some drugs, just link directly to the manufacturer's own DTC site. It doesn't even provide a coupon, but many of the coupons specifically say they cannot be combined with like any kind of insurance, and that they are not allowed to count towards a deductible, which I thought was a interesting and maybe might add a layer of complexity to the decisions people have to make.
100%. And we also saw that in a related recent development, which is the order on the ESI matter that came out of the FTC. There's actually a clause in that order that provides for counting TrumpRx patient expenditures towards standard offering plans, patient out-of-pocket deductibles, but it also noted that there might need to be statutory and regulatory changes in order to make sure that doing so doesn't count to manufacturer's best price. I think manufacturers in general would be interested in having those amounts count towards a patient's out-of-pocket and deductible, but only if it's not being counted in best price. And I found it interesting that that order recognized the need to work through that really important regulatory issue. And I'll say in all of these MFN agreement announcements and all of the discussions around the Globe Guard and generous models, the Trump administration has been very sensitive to the need to exclude those prices from best price in all cases. And so they're carrying that through to that ESI order as well.
And I think probably the big question is the way they're going about it. Is this actually achieving a most favored nation price for American patients?
Well, I will answer it depending on Globe and Guard. So for generous, it's not going to really impact patient out-of-pocket costs because Medicaid patients in general really have no out-of-pocket obligation to speak of. So it's not going to change their out-of-pocket obligation. On the Guard model, which is the Part D model, the proposed rule acknowledges that it will not change patient out-of-pocket spending at all. It will have absolutely no impact on that. It's just going to generate an additional rebate to the Medicare Trust Fund. And on the Globe model, which is the Part B model, those MFN rebates would work to lower or count towards the patient 20% copay. But I think there was a recent study that came out that it really ultimately doesn't change that out of pocket that much for Part B, even for existing inflation rebates. So if it's going to affect anything, at most it will affect on the Part B out of pocket, but it's not clear to me that that's true either. Again, I think what largely it's going to do is just generate net revenue for the Medicare Trust Fund.
And this is obviously stepping a little outside your expertise, but last week there was the tariff drama. The Supreme Court ruled that some tariffs were illegal, that kind of pulled them back. And then Trump responded. President Trump responded by issuing, I think at this point, it's a 15% tariff. And obviously, tariffs are something different, but in the MFN negotiations, the president used tariffs as a negotiating tool. Do you see this changing the way those negotiations are handled and the effectiveness of this tool?
Depends. The Supreme Court decision was on so-called IEEPA tariffs, and the tariff tool that the administration really has been pointing to in relation to its MFN negotiations are Section 232 tariffs, which are a different beast, where the administration still we're waiting for them to issue their report for implementing those tariffs. So I don't. You know, that decision didn't impact those tariffs in particular. It's an open question whether the reasoning of the Supreme Court in the IEEPA case could be brought to bear to challenge the Section 232 tariffs if and when the administration imposes them. But that hasn't happened yet.
Awesome. And do you think like MFN pricing, are we going to start seeing broader impacts to like the list prices of drugs? Are they going to start kind of getting that under control, or is it going to remain more like how they provide rebates to customers?
I don't think it's going to do necessarily either of those things. What I'm seeing is people thinking really hard around what they're doing with their drugs in these comparator markets. Are they launching at all? if they are launching, what price are they charging? Or are they willing simply to say, we're not going to launch unless we get this price because we're not going to have that sort of spillover impact in the US market? I work with companies that have fairly, whatever the size of the company, they have an infrastructure in place for tracking their government prices under Medicare, Medicare Part D, under state programs. They have sort of compliance structures in place for monitoring those prices because anything they do from a commercial standpoint in the US can impact their gross to net on Medicaid. It can impact their gross to net on Part B because of the government pricing data they have to report every period. What companies are starting to do is basically set up the same infrastructure, but in Europe, because they're going to have to start thinking about every commercial decision they make in these comparator countries and filter those pricing decisions through their Medicaid impacts, their Part B impacts, their Part D impacts. So they're not just looking at, hey, if I do a big discount to this HMO, will it drive enough volume to offset the Medicaid rebate impact? They now have to extend that and do that same analysis for every pricing decision that they are making in every comparator country. And that is what I see people doing, is just expanding the scope of their sort of pricing committee tracking around decisions ex-US that folks in the US never had to worry about. And they now have to worry about it not just in products that they currently have, but they have to look at it in terms of licensing, BD&L arrangements, any asset that has a US market with significant presence in Medicaid Part B or Part D, which is pretty much any commercially successful product. Part of that analysis now needs to be, do we have to adjust our revenue model because of our ability to commercialize this product outside the US in the way we used to, or are we not going to be able to do that because it's not worth the potential impact in the US?
So if I understand, you're saying that some drugs may not launch in certain markets because of this.
I think that is the risk. That is the active question. People didn't use before MFN pricing. Companies would launch in foreign markets if it made commercial sense to do so based on the revenue in that market. They can no longer make that decision in a silo for the revenue in that market because they have to worry about what it would do in the US market if they did that.
That is, I guess, an unexpected consequence of all this.
Well, right. I think the Trump administration would say this will drive prices up in Europe. Or in these comparator countries, that's what the Trump administration is saying that they want to do. They want these other countries, these other markets, to pay the fair price for the product and not, freeload off of the US market. I think there is a debate about whether the way to incentivize that is through an MFN model versus just trade negotiations and engagement with those countries directly. Rather than trying to work it through pressure on industry here to force change in those foreign markets. That is part of the policy debate that's happening, is what's the most effective and efficient way to do that doesn't impact patient access to therapies.
So, if I understand everything correctly, it sounds like the industry is still figuring things out, and it's where, I guess, where do you see things 6 months from now?
Well, I think by then we will have had a legal challenge to the Globe and Guard models. The comments are due today. They go into effect as early as Q4 in the case of Globe, the Part B demonstration project. We expect the final rules to come out relatively quickly for a lot of different reasons. I expect that as soon as they come out, there will be legal challenges to filed against them, because I do think that there are some legal infirmities to the way it's being framed and rolled out, but we'll see if those are successful. Just because they're theoretical infirmities doesn't mean that those will win in court. But I do think that we'll see legal challenges to that. So within 6 months, I don't know that we'll have a decision, but we'll see what the status of that is. I think we won't have had the midterms, but I think once We have the midterms. Well, I guess that's, yeah, that's not, that's a little more than 6 months from now. While the Trump administration has been pushing the MFN agenda on its own through executive action, now that this is a topic of conversation, the question is whether we're going to see any move to adopt that or push that forward in Congress. The president has already proposed that through his most recent healthcare proposed legislation. I don't see that going away. I think now that MFN is something that people talk about, it's hard to, I think it's going to be hard for both parties to just walk away from it. And so that's why I think you see industry putting together what I view as pretty compelling arguments around why this is not the way to go. But those are going to be policy debates that we're going to still be having in 6 months.
I have to imagine healthcare costs are going to be front and center for the next couple of months politically.
I mean, I've read the press that you probably have that points to polling models being that drug pricing is still an issue where the president gets traction. And so that's something that he is telling his team and those who are in competitive races that they should be talking about going into the midterm. So I think we will continue to hear about drug pricing.
Well, and that covers all the questions I had. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that'll do. That'll do for now, I think. Thanks, Mike.
No problem. And I guess we'll see what happens at the midterms.
Yeah, we will see. Maybe we'll come back and talk again then.
Sure thing. Absolutely. All right, well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.